The DPW studio is damp.
Moist.
It is. And it smells a little. Because Pennsylvania decided to have all these stupid floods for no reason. My garage got a little wet, which leaked into not actually the studio, but I have my desk and my writing set up on the other side of the room, gone all wet.
All wet.
And I did a piss poor job of cleaning it up. I sprayed stuff on it. And I was supposed to suck it up with the vacuum thing that my wife told me to do. And I didn't do it.
Did it for five minutes.
And I just put a fucking fan over there and sprayed some antibacterial spray. And
that's how you get ants, Caleb.
That's how you get more than ants. So I have a question for you.
All right.
This could actually go for the general audience who are writers that are listening, too. I don't know. You don't have to really comment on anything, but just ponder this yourself. So my publisher, Dark Homes Publishing, that's publishing my story, Asher Kang versus the Army of the Undead in Ethereal Nightmares. Is that what it's called? I always forget. Why do I keep forgetting?
Because of where they changed it,
They changed the name, yeah. I believe it's Ethereal Nightmares. It's a UK-based publication. Well, today they sent me an update for the, like an addition for the contract that I signed. They forgot to add in just the general editing thing. Usually the contracts that you sign, they always have like, do you get permission for the publisher or the editor to, you know, not change your works, but like
edit. Maybe change like some of the wording or some of the stuff like that.
The grammar, the spelling, like any major changes they would have to send to you, but like spelling, grammar, and punctuation, stuff like that. I was like, whatever. But this is one that I thought was peculiar because I never thought about before since I haven't encountered this. As you know, this is my first international publication. So as an American man, I write in the American style. The British style is different. For one, the punctuation. Like they do things like I think the outside of the quotations goes the punctuation. So be like quotation, like, you know, dialogue, quotation, period, pretty sure, commas, whatever. And there's just like a bunch of weird little things like that. Also, I'm pretty sure in UK publications, it's not the quotations. It's like the single quotation, not the double that we use.
Yeah. What's the difference between the two? Is there a difference?
Well, in the American style, you do the double quotation for dialogue.
Okay.
And then if you did a quote in the dialogue, it's a single quotation.
Oh, so like if you're saying somebody else's quote,
yeah,
it gets.
If you have a character saying that, yeah, somebody else's quote. But in the English style, I think it's the opposite. I think it's single quotation. And then if you were to use somebody else's quote in a quote, nobody cares. But the thing is, giving the permission for them to change, it's stated in the contract that they will change my story to the English spelling. So you think of like color, C-O-L-O-U-R.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a little weird. But the main one for me is the punctuation. And maybe the grammar. I don't know what they're going to do with the grammar because it's a fantasy story. But the punctuation, I think, is going to be weird because I don't like that style, the British-style punctuation, you know? Like, with outside the... It's weird. I almost was thinking about writing them and just being like, hey, I mean, I'm fine if you want to make these changes, but to save you some work, I've read a lot of international publications where if it's an American writer, they just leave the story as
is. Well, that's what I'm kind of thinking. Like, if it's an American writer doing, like... And writing it in its American style, like, I don't see the need to try to change it.
Well,
I
that's
guess.
The thing, like, especially with the spelling. So, if they change the way I spell the words, I mean, they state it's for consistency. So, the formatting and stuff for the whole anthology reads the same, but it's like, but there's American writers that we don't write that way.
And so, do you think that happens, like, with like overseas writers that whenever, like, you know, their stuff's coming over, like, you know, do you think, like, it's different?
Well, I've read different anthologies, like a lot of the literary reviews, like the New England Review and stuff, and anytime it's an English writer, like, they still use the English spelling, but some of them do change it to the American punctuation. Others, I think, keep it, probably for laziness, but the most I ever see is the spelling changes. So I guess that, or I mean, they keep the spelling. So it's like, you know, this is an English writer. They spell like this. They leave it, but they might change the punctuation. But I don't really like the idea that my style will be changed to the English style just for the fact that I am an American writer, though.
Yeah.
I mean, they bought the story. They could do what they want with it. I don't mind. I'm just happy to be published. But
right.
It's just like another thing that kind of bothered me about it is, say in the future, I want to do an Asher Kang collection,
mm-hmm.
whether it's my own collection or I find a publisher that wants to do it. So when they go through and find, you know, okay, this one was published here, are they going to use that English style, even though that's not the way I actually wrote the story?
I would say in that scenario, go back to your original style, because then also then it's like, oh, check out this story that it's the same story, but it's kind of different now.
But
like,
does that fuck up the publishing rights? Because like you have to give the publishing credit, but it's like, well, actually, this technically wasn't the published version.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
The main thing, yeah, again, it's just the spelling. It's like, I'm not an English writer, so I shouldn't be adding use to my words. Because I feel like that kind of makes me seem pompous or something, you know?
Right. Or it would be like one thing if your story like took place over there.
Yeah.
Like, and you had, you know, and you had like European characters talking European, you know, slang or ways or what, you know, yeah. You know what I mean? That would be one thing. But like also, like you said, yours is like in a fantasy land that's not like, you know, so.
Well, being sword and sorcery too, it's also written, like think of like the Conan style. So just the word, the word layouts are slightly different, mm-hmm. you know, like I think what I do often when I write those stories, I don't use contractions too mm-hmm. often. So I don't even remember if I used contractions. So it'd be a lot of just it is instead of it's, things like that. But over a long work, if they start changing stuff just to fit the style, I wonder if any of that'll change.
Oh, yeah.
I hope not. I mean, I'm really worried that I would get, you know, I'm all happy to get it in the mail. And then I open it. And I'm like, oh, my story's like slightly different.
You're right.
I don't know. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I would think, especially considering how. Like, you know, she seems to valid your opinion on things so far, just to be like, hey, would you mind just printing it in the way that I have it written, if it would not be that big of a deal?
Well, I'm hoping they send me a proof so I could just see it, and if it's not that bad, because I don't know, again, I don't know if they would actually, it just says you give the permission. I don't know if they're actually going to go and like change the actual spelling of a lot of words.
Yeah.
I don't know how many words I have in there that would be spelled differently in the English version. So that's something I guess I've never encountered. So that's
a new
thing. Yeah,
something to keep your...
What would you feel in that situation? Like if you have a story accepted in a UK publisher and they just say, hey, we got to change the spelling and the, you know, the quotations and everything.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I would want it to be as close to the thing as I read it. Because
you're not an English author. So you don't want people reading it and be like, oh, this guy's English.
And it's not like... It'd be like one thing if it was like, hey, this book is going to get... You know, we have outlets into different things, so it's going to be translated into different languages. Like, that's a little bit different because of how...
You have to change.
Yeah. As we've read with the Japanese, you know, authors and stuff, you know what I mean? That'd be different, but whenever it's basically the same thing...
Yeah, you're just
like that's the kind of stuff that bugs me. Like, it's like, why can't it just be one thing? Why do we both have to have our, like, countries have our heads up our asses and be like, no, my way's better. No, my way's better. You know, I hate the Oxford comma. No, I love the Oxford comma. Like, you know, just like, who gives a shit? Like, this is just
that's another thing, the Oxford comma. I mean, I use the Oxford comma, but are they going to change some of that stuff just because it's not their style guide?
Because
that went by whatever, you know, the American style guide. Is it? I don't, like, that's something I didn't even think about, but are you going to change? Because that could change, like, the sentence, you know?
Mm-hmm. I hate when I have to accept cookies. Hold on, I'm trying to see.
Eat them cookies. So, like, here's the simple ones. You know, British, color, flavor, humor, labor, neighbor. They all have a U in it.
Obviously, like, not. Why, though?
I don't know. They just add a U to all of them. But then this is where I always forget there's a difference. Apologize, organize, recognize. So the U.S. always uses Z's. I use these, you use these. They use S's. I don't like the S's. I'm a Merc.
Yeah.
I came over here back in the olden times of the 16 and 1700s.
I'd rather use a letter that makes no goddamn sense in that way.
Analyze, breathalyze, and paralyze. Again, we use these. They use S's. Here's another one I didn't even know was one. Travel, traveled, traveling, traveler. They use double L's in all those, except for travel, and we only use single L's.
Because, like, also, you know, say, so, you know, like me, some of your other friends and family members, like, so, you know, we go and order this book. It's coming over here to America. Like, you know what I mean? It'd be, like, one thing if we're like, okay, we're going to figure out a way. We're going to have two different sets of, like, you know, we had this American version for, like, the American audience, and then we have this UK, you know, But again, for such a small...
Maybe I'm the only English or the only American author in this collection, too. I don't know. I don't think I am, but what if I am, you know? Then maybe I am the oddball. Here's where it gets disgusting.
Okay. Aluminum?
No, aluminium. Leukemia. Maneuver. Estrogen. Oh, my God. I couldn't even read the English version of it. And pediatric. So, U.S. leukemia is L-E-U-K-E-M-I-A. Leukemia.
Okay.
British, L-U-E-K, or L-E-U-K-A-E-M-I-A, so leukemia. But now it gets worse. Maneuver, and I've seen this before, and I always think it's a fuck-up. We spell it M-A-N-E-U-V-E-R. I can't talk shit because I always misspell this word anyway.
Yeah.
They spell it M-A-N-O-E-U-V-R-E.
It's almost like they do like more of like the spelling it as it sounds, kind of.
Yeah, maneuver. I don't know. It still looks bad. But here's the one that really got me. So estrogen, E-S-T-R-O-G-E-N. They spell it O-E-S-T-R-O-G-E-N.
So silent O?
Oh, yeah. Why? Unless they pronounce that O. And then pediatric.
Oogygen?
Then pediatric. We are P-E-D. They are P-A-E-D. So just some differences. And then now we go back into the defense, license, offense, pretense. So they actually use C's and we use S's. And I think I always misspell a lot of these because I use the C's.
Yeah.
And I didn't.
I've always had trouble with like C's and S's.
Yeah. And then here's one. These ones I think I always go with the British one and I always fuck up. So analog, catalog, dialogue, they always are UE, and a lot of, we do both. So we do either just OG or the GUE. I always do GUE, which is technically the British one. So that's just a bunch of stupid shit that doesn't really matter. I'm happy to get published in it. I don't really care, honestly, but it's just one of those things where it's like, it doesn't feel like it's quite my work if it's in an English style.
Yeah.
As an American author. If they just changed,
if at that point they should send you a thing, and be like, hey, we're thinking about doing this, you know, changing this. Would you like to take another once over your story and make like the changes yourself? Maybe
it's gonna be a lot of work. It's a 10,000 word story, so on their part, that's a lot of work to change all that.
Maybe they'll just let it go. Maybe it's just like, you know, one of those things, like, you know, like when you sign your contract for work, and that's like, oh, we have the right to fire you whenever, like, you know what I mean? It's like one of those things, like, they don't actually plan on using it, but like they have to have that as a, you know, to let you know.
Well, that's just the thing. Like, it could just simply be that, you know, just to know. We do have the right to do this.
We're covering our asses and let you know, but hopefully we won't do any of that.
Yeah, so the clauses they added that I guess they just forgot to put in the original contract. So 2.2, scope of editing, publisher will edit the manuscript solely for correcting typos and grammatical errors. Fine with.
Yeah.
Ensuring consistent formatting throughout the manuscript. I'm fine with.
Right.
Converting the manuscript to British English spelling and punctuation conventions. That's the one that threw me.
Right.
2.3, author acknowledgement. Author acknowledges the publisher will make these edits without prior approval from author. I'm fine with that. And 2.4, limited editing scope. Publisher will not make any edits to the content or substance of the manuscript beyond those listed in section 2.2. So that's all fine. Just that one change to the British spelling, it makes me think, like, if I had a literary journal and a English writer submitted a story, I would keep it the way they wrote it because I'm like, it's their English.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want people to know their English, you know? Like, that makes them stand out, I think. Again, maybe I might be just nitpicking here, but...
You know what? This is the thing we'll be interested to the next time we have Obagon on. With him just being more worldly, it'd be interesting to see his point of view.
Yeah.
You know, to see, you know, what he thinks of that.
And see if he would even care. Well, that's another thing. So, reading, like, his works, I don't remember them standing out to me as British styled English.
No.
Not that I can remember, and he's British. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's one of those things you just don't think about because it's so similar. Because when you think like AP styles and stuff, like different styles guides, like over here, and I think Canada, I think we use the same ones.
Yeah. Well, that's what I said. Like, I wonder if an indie to like mid level like English author got like some leeway and got even a book deal or something with a publisher over here in America, if they're just like, oh, we're gonna change it, like, you know what I mean? Like, I've never really noticed enough to, you know,
I've noticed when I've read things and I'm halfway, like, partially through it. I'm like, oh, this is written in the English style. Like, I know that, but I've never noticed, like, I guess if you had changed it, I just wouldn't notice, right? So if some English author was published in something and I started reading it and I didn't know they were English and they put it into the American style, I just wouldn't even think twice. So maybe that'd be the deal. Maybe they just don't want people to be like, oh, that stands out. Why? Yeah. As long as the story's the same, I guess it doesn't matter. Anyway, that actually kind of goes into our story because we're speaking about British people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Specifically, Neil Gaiman.
Yeah.
He's coming on.
Yes, yes.
He's here.
Hey, buddy.
Oh, Nitro bit him. He's gone.
Oh.
Anyway, stick around. That was a really long cold open.
Yeah, that's pretty, like, that was like 20 minutes, ain't it?
Yeah, but that's fine because I don't know how long this episode is going to be. But if you guys have any opinions on this matter, feel free to reach out to us. I would like to hear, just see, would you be upset or would you be concerned or would you not care? I would like to know. You are listening to the Drunken Pen Writing Podcast. It's a podcast about writing by two writers who are published.
Yes. Technically.
I feel like we should start being professional in the intro. Be like, hey, we actually are published writers now. You can't just say we're fucking dumb fucks like we were the last 5 years.
What dumb fucks that have been published?
Dumb fucks who are published, which means the people who have published us are geniuses.
Geniuses.
They see our genius, perhaps. So I am Caleb James, your faithful host today with me, Spencer, the Welsh Wandering Wanker Church.
Oh, that's similar to...
I try to keep it real, like, UK Englishy. What were you called? You said you had some worse.
Like, what would have been, like, the Willy Wanker or something like that.
Close. I like we both had a wanker.
Yeah.
So today we are heading on over to Books and Bow. .com.
Bow.
Bow. Bow. Bow. Bow. I thought I was going to find more lists, but I didn't. 15 best Neil Gaiman books. I want to do best to worst.
Yeah.
But I got best.
So 15, like, that's a good chunk of his work, I would think. Right? Other than, you know, like, the comics and stuff, probably.
Yeah, I suppose. So, can you guess what number 15 is on this list? No, you can't, because you didn't read this one.
Okay.
Fortunately, The Milk. It's his kid's book.
Oh, okay.
I read this one, and it was okay if you're a child.
Yeah. I should start getting some of those for my niece, actually, now. Yeah, I mean, I think
you could buy the whole collection, like, with Coraline and stuff. I did. It was, like, $10-$15.
No, but what you just got, like, the digital?
No.
It
was a book collection.
Oh, okay, yeah. Because, I mean, she's probably a little too young for them now, but, you know.
It actually, it came with Graveyard Book, too.
Ooh.
So you get a good book with the kids' book.
Yeah.
This is just I don't even go into it. It's just a child's book. It's about fun stuff. A guy looks just like Neil Gaiman. He gets some milk and some shenanigans ensue with pirates, dinosaurs, and aliens. Number 14, Trigger Warning. This is Short Fictions and Disturbances. We haven't read this.
No, because we have Smoke and... Because I think Trigger Warning is like the second short story collection, and that Smoke and Mirrors is the first.
This isn't a glowing endorsement. Neil Gaiman is often at his strongest when writing short stories, as many writers are.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, Trigger Warning is not a great example of this.
Oh. Why is it on the list then?
It was garbage. They had to fill out the list and it's garbage. So while his first two short story collections deliver dark, twisted, and monstrous tales that stick like barbs in the reader's mind and butt.
He didn't say butt. You put butt there.
How do you know? How do you know I put a butt there? If I do it real smooth and add stuff on, you'll never know. I'll make the people at Books and Bow sound like scumbags, or at least gross. What was I saying?
Oh, but
Trigger Warning is that very worst of books, a forgettable one.
Ooh,
that's harsh.
Yeah.
As this person has already said, Gaiman has never written a bad book. They said that earlier. I didn't read that. They said that.
In the intro, I'd probably imagine.
In the introduction of this article, I'm sure they said that. But this is far from being one of the best books Neil Gaiman ever written. He wrote a bad book. It is a bad book. If he had a bad book, this would be the book.
I don't know if I've ever really read much of his actual short stories, I think. Have you got to any of his short stories, really?
I read his like a Sherlock Holmes story.
Okay.
And I think he wrote a story that was... based off the murder in the Rue Morgue.
Mm.
I might be fucking that up, but I'm that might be a Sherlock Holmes type story. Who cares?
All right.
Who cares? Who gives a fuck? 13. This one's a surprise to be so low. Anansi Boys.
Really? Yeah.
I really like this. That was good. Sequel to American Gods.
I would say, I think, like, I've heard some people say that they preferred that more than American Gods.
I could see it. So this book overlaps with the world and characters of American Gods, but not in a meaningful way.
Mm.
Not meaningful. Start doing cocaine. Clear up them sinuses.
I think that would make it worse.
Makes it sniffle. Yeah, but you get a hole in there.
Yeah.
This is an also impressively bloated novel. Jeez, this person hates Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like this person's a fan.
No. Unlike American Gods, however, it has no good excuse for that. I thought it was a good book. Do I feel flat or sound flat? I think my headphones, I think my ear stopped working.
Yeah?
Yeah, okay.
You're back.
So Nancy, I'm not reading the fucking description. You get it. 12, Odd and the Frost Giants.
Is that like another kid one?
Here's a lesser known Neil Gaiman book. In case you didn't know who wrote these books on this list.
Yeah. No gaming.
Written for children and charmingly illustrated once again by the wonderful Chris Riddell. Odd in the Forest Giants is a very slender book set in the world of Norse mythology, Neil Gaiman's biggest influence. So if you like kids' books, there you go.
There you go.
Number 11, another one that's maybe I just read all his bad books.
Yeah.
Stardust, number 11.
Yeah, we both read Stardust, yeah.
Yeah, placing Stardust so far down this list may or may not be a divisive move, you fucking assholes. Mm. I'm going to tank. I'm going to fucking...
Just tank there.
I'm going to tank. Make them sound like shit. I honestly have no idea, but this is not, in my opinion, one of the best Neil Gaiman books. In fact!
Oh, wow, he can infect it.
In fact,
you can just you can just hear him push up his glasses.
Actually, in fact, every creative move that the beloved film adaptation makes is an improvement on their original book. No, it wasn't.
I'd say I hadn't seen the movie, but I've heard
the movie was all right, but the book was
not
better.
Great, like
I love Stardust.
Well, I think the thing about that is like we talked about in previous episodes of the. Because I think a lot of people think it's fantasy, but it's more fairy tale.
It's fairy tale.
And the difference of that.
Yeah, we had an episode about that, I think. Number 10, The Sleeper and the Spindle. Never heard of this one.
No.
But it's got two ladies making sex on the cover. They're making the tongues do that thing where they touch.
Get it, gay man. Get it.
You give each other the plaque, and then you get my halitosis in your mouth. I didn't even touch it.
Gingivitis.
And then you can't see their hands because they're up each other's bumps.
Up their blouses.
They're wearing blouses. How did you know? Because I showed you the picture of them fingering each other's butts.
Thumbs.
From underneath. From here on, everything is good. Mm. We're really getting into Neil Gaiman's best books and
so
now.
So wasn't there just a top 10 list? Why do 15? If there's just like, hey, we're going to do top 10, but then we're going to add these five shit ones on the end. Like, but.
The bottom five are good books. Make them sound like it. But either flawed or lacking the spark of his better books. Consider this a top 10 Neil Gaiman books, and it begins with The Sleeper and the Spindle. The Sleeper and the Spindle is a very different beast. As a Neil Gaiman fan, I was surprised when I first picked it up. The storybook format, the gorgeous fairy tale cover made it clear from the start. This was a different kind of Neil Gaiman book. It's an intelligent read. An illustrated fairy tale for adults. I don't think it was.
So it's probably like a graphic novel then?
I don't fucking know. The Graveyard Book, number 9. I will say that was a very good book. It was Neil Gaiman's take on the Jungle Book.
Yeah, with ghosts. And
it's a kid's book for adults. I liked it.
You know what? When you were telling me about that book, that never crossed my mind until you just said that right now.
Yeah. Now, this next one, number 8, I have often seen on list of Neil Gaiman's worst books.
Oh, yeah?
And I read this book, and I thought it was okay at best, but it definitely is not one of his good books. Number 8, The Ocean at the End of the Lane.
Mm.
I think we might got ourselves a contrarian on this list. One of them people who's just like, I'm going to like it because everyone else doesn't.
And then I'm not going to like all the ones that everybody else likes.
I'm special. The story goes that Neil Gaiman wrote this book while his wife, singer-songwriter Amanda Palmer, was away for several months. Okay. Why is it good? Do you see why it's good? It's surreal and terrifying.
Okay.
Is it though?
Yeah, not really.
The burps.
Number 7, Fragile Things. Fragile Things.
That's not the
short story collection. I have that one. Mm-hmm. I have not. That's the one I read. The thing with the monkey man.
Yeah,
I didn't say anything about the monkey man, but the Murder in the Rue Morgue was, for those who haven't read the 1800s Poe story, Murder in the Rue Morgue, a gorilla man, just a gorilla, pretending to be a man, did some murdering. Short story collection. It's good. 6, Norse mythology. I have not read this, but this is Neil Gaiman's takes on Norse mythology.
I'd be interested to read that after, like, and see how it goes up against, like, American Gods.
Yeah?
See if there's any, like,
overlap?
Yeah, or, you know, just parallels or whatever.
I'm happy to admit that when this book first released, I was a little disappointed. Shortly before, I read Joanne Harris' The Gospel of Loki, a charming novel which took all the... Shut up.
Why are we talking about somebody else?
Exactly. After reading The Gospel and Loki, Neil Gaiman's Norse mythology almost felt lazy by comparison.
Ugh! I don't like this guy or his list.
But the truth is that this is a very accessible collection of incredible Norse myths. All right, fuck off. 5, Coraline. Okay, that's
everybody great. Knows Coraline.
Yeah, that's great. If you're a child, you like Coraline, sure. 4, Good Omens.
Ever Good Omens.
You said it was good.
Yeah.
Wiggly. Why does this person like it? It's written as a joint effort by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett. Good Omens is a book on this list with the biggest cult following. People who like this book really, really love it. Myself included, of course. Mm-hmm. All right. Dingbat.
It's probably a big David Tennant fan, too.
Yeah, probably. 3, Smoke and Mirrors. That's his other short story collection, and you got me this one. And
yeah.
You also have it.
Yeah, and then whenever I bought that, I also bought a copy of Fragile Things, too.
Yeah, so we all know.
So we can get on our game in it.
The gaming guys.
Yeah, the gaming guys.
That's what we're going
to... Oh, okay.
We have Mirror Coming Minute. We're going to have the gaming guys. When we finally start doing gaming books.
We can't have a game minute?
A game minute. Why did you fucking never suggest that before? It's great. 2, Neverwhere. I've never read Neverwhere.
I really, really enjoyed Neverwhere. I think it was one of the... I think it might have been, like, the first of his, like, novels, other than maybe some of, like, the shorter ones that, like, I've read, and I really enjoyed it.
Nice urban fantasy. 1, American Gods. So, yeah. Wait a minute. This is it.
This is it?
Of all the best Neil Gaiman books, American Gods comes out on top. This does come with a few caveats, however. However.
You can take your caveats, turn them sideways, and shove them up your candy ass.
Okay. Fucking Spencer.
Whoever the person who wrote this.
I gotta edit this now. I gotta have my eardrum blown out. American Gods isn't a perfect novel. It is overly long, and its protagonist is frustratingly bland compared to the rest of the book's cast. Whoever falls aside, American Gods still comes out on top thanks to its big ideas and its setting. Who wrote this? Who fucking wrote this?
I'm going
to
say you can tell this is a person who's not, like, a fiction writer because, like, well, like, I'm only, like, 130 pages into American Gods, and I'm really enjoying it, but, like... You know, you talk about, like, the protagonist being bland, but when you have all these, sometimes you need, like, that, you know, like, that kind of, that straight man kind of guy almost.
Yeah.
To bump all this crazy shit off of.
This person seems to be popular on the YouTube. Mm. Her name's Willow. Yeah. And they got a bunch of books. They're a she, they, so not a him. Mm. Like you said, you... Piece of shit.
Oh, she can shove it up her candy ass.
Or their candy ass.
Their candy ass.
I never really get the she, they. What's the they part?
I don't know.
So you're a she, but you can't be a her.
Well, no, but I've seen she slash her slash they.
No, this is just she slash they.
They.
So it's like, she wrote a terrible article, but if I said, like, I can't say I don't like her article. I have to say I don't like their article.
Their not, article. Not, no, because of they.
Well, there's there. A part of they. You can't say that. You know what, Spencer?
I mean, I don't know. I assume just how touchy they are on that wouldn't be. You, like a there would be another section of a they. It wouldn't be they. It would be, you know, they, then there.
You're a very cool guy. You know that? You fucking, oh, man, we should do this one. Neil Gaiman's best and worst.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's a fucking, ugh.
Is it a big one?
Nah, it's just written dumb. It's like on a forum. But I guess this would be the best. American Gods.
Okay.
Anansi Boys.
All right.
Black Orchid. I never heard of that one.
It's a comic book.
Coraline. The Eternals.
No. No. Is that that's the best? That's on the best?
Okay, this person said, liked it a lot.
Ooh.
I find the contrast between Kirby grand epic metaphor, mythologizing Gaiman's well gods, or just blokes, you know. So it's written a little weird. Oh. Or just blokes, you know, small scale mythology. I can't say that word.
Mythological?
Mythologizing. Mythologizing. I don't think mythological and myth jizing. I don't think you can jize it, all right?
Like this.
Mythologizing, fascinating. John Romita Jr. just destroyed on this book. Did he destroy it?
And maybe the maybe the pages.
Got the small human bits and the huge Kirby bits with equal aplomb. I didn't like that book.
No, it wasn't his best effort.
Miracle Man.
That's comic.
Neverwhere. Norse mythology. Sandman companion. Probably. View from the cheap seats. What's the worst? I guess there isn't a worst.
Damn right.
Damn fucking tootin'. I think that guy writes books and they're all right.
I mean, I haven't really got to one yet to where I was just like, oh, that was bad.
Just the Eternals.
Well, yeah, but I mean, in prose, like his pro work, I haven't really came across anything where I was like, I didn't really dig that.
The Pond one was the worst I've read of his, and it was still all right. I think it didn't enrapture me, but I thought it was pretty good. Fortunately, The Milk was a little sophomoric.
Yeah.
Yeah, the literary themes of that book were a little, they're a little watered down, I think.
A little juvenile.
Yeah, I will say it. I thought, fortunately, The Milk could have been a little more metaphor heavy, you know, maybe touching
a little bit more rich. The milk could be a little bit more rich.
Could have been a little richer, a little cream.
Yeah.
Cream rises to the cream. I'm going to have to listen to some of that Willow person's YouTube critiques to see if they are, if they come across in the videos as they came across in the article.
True.
But you know what? To be fair, some people just have different tastes.
That's fair.
Maybe.
But again,
also, female reader might be different than a male reader coming to something like Gaiman. They often we find take different things away from male writers, such as we might take different things from female writers.
Yep. Yeah.
Something we should probably do an episode on one day, because if you have like, I remember my mom reading Stephen King always took different things away from the books than I did.
Yeah.
Because she's coming at it from you know, a mother's point of view, a female's point of view. And I come at it as like, I'm a little boy and I want to see murder.
Well, I know like he's had some trouble with women characters, but I also think he's wrote a good share of good, like solid female characters. So that's probably like another like you know, something that she probably liked on those, at least those certain stories, you know, is like that strong female character, especially back then, they weren't getting a lot of that.
And then she licked his boner head and his cock erupted into a geyser of cum.
Is that what you mean? Which one was that one? Which one was that from?
Fortunately, The Milk.
Oh,
no. Coraline. Yeah. I believe it or not, I don't have Stephen King's sex scenes memorized.
Come on. You got it enough to fucking pull it out.
Like. I did it. I just made that up. That's what I would write.
Oh, okay.
Like that's a Murakami. Like the boner head.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know. Like,
it's real romantic.
Yeah, because honestly, King normally kind of like is his like sex scenes are either like kind of just like passed over or very just like awkward.
It's a boner head. Yeah. And then her tongue flicked my ballsack, and it stung a little.
I could feel the click of her tongue as it pressed against my balls.
The weight hit me like a little boy flicking his naughty brother in the shoulder.
There was a slight pressure in my colon.
So that's the episode. If you want to check out more of our sex scenes, at DPW Podcast on X, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Those are the places you can follow us. We don't actually post the sex scenes. You have to go to Spencer's OnlyFans for that.
Don Tootin.
And this month, week, day, year, he is the Welsh wandering wanker. So he's just wandering around. touching himself.
Mm-hmm.
Stroking.
These fields are sure are nice.
Oh, you know what would have been a good one? The Stafford Shaft Stroker.
Fuck.
That's a blown opportunity. If you want to check out my publication history at CalebJamesK.com. Just CalebJamesK.com. Don't put the at. Don't put the at. Mouth gone gummy. Thank you for listening. I don't want to talk anymore, so we will be here next week probably.